Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, science, physics in general, and associated kinds of ideas. I thought tonight we'd talk about the life of service after we die, which is in the astral world. One of the reasons I want to cover this is because it's way different than anything that even if people serve in the physical world. Service in the astral world is considerably different. And there are various levels of service. So it isn't like, well, I get there and I just do what everybody else does, because that's not the case. It's actually dependent upon our ability to have consciousness and to maintain it in a certain way while we are living in the astral world. Now, what is consciousness? Consciousness is the ability to take all of our senses and use them in ways that are new and that can be joined together in, ways that help to create a larger whole of understanding of the world as we are in it. And so that helps us to then be able to serve more if we're more conscious. Most people think of consciousness as whether they're there or they're not there. In a sense, that's true, because consciousness, if it is not wide enough, it's the same as not being there. So when you lack consciousness in some ways, you're not there in some ways regarding the surroundings that you're in and your use of senses in regards to that surroundings. Consciousness is now necessarily knowledge. Knowledge is helpful and can be applied to the awareness we get through our senses. However, knowledge alone without the awareness can lead to very great misunderstanding about the world around us. So consciousness is even vastly more important. Okay, so when a person is in service in the physical world, where we are right now, service is almost always dependent upon the restrictions of the illusion that accompanies a lack of good awareness due to the type of energy, which is very dense and resistant to following our thought and to the ability for us to think as well while we are physically alive. So consequently, our ability to serve is tremendously hampered by the nature of the physical environment, which is material, and that's the main issue, is that the materiality of energy, which is the density of energy, is so great because of what we call material, that the energy around us is just almost impossible to get to do much of anything without a great deal of effort. The problem is that service becomes godlike in its nature when it is effortless. So the ability to effortlessly serve is restricted to just a few people who live at any time in the physical world. Most people cannot effortlessly serve and consequently cannot serve as God would serve in this world. And that's obvious maybe to most of us around that that's the case. The people who can effortlessly serve have disciplined themselves in a spiritual sense, for considerable periods of time usually, and with fairly consistent success, to allow their senses to join together and to drive out the illusion that they have, which expands their consciousness. Then they can start serving in some ways, but usually not fantastically, as long as they're still human. In some ways, as God would, which mean without mistakes, with enlightenment as the result, and as the means, both means and result. So the person serving is becoming enlightened, and the result of the service is to help to enlighten others. And so those kinds of service do exist, but they exist as a rarity in comparison to, we'll call it, a mixture in this world particularly of mostly failing to serve in a completely virtuous way and serving somewhat virtuously. And that's the complexity of being human. It's the way humans at the present time are designed. We have not advanced ourselves to the point where we are either born virtually or completely with unified senses in our bodies. And this causes us to have this illusion that carries with us for each physical lifetime. So that's the issue with service here. Now, when we transfer our consciousness from a focus from our physical body, our etheric physical body, into our astral body, which is usually occurs for most people when they die. Rarely it occurs in people who have astral traveled and maintained a very high level of consciousness, both. And in those situations, those people may then enjoy some level of the ability to both serve and be conscious in the astral world. Now, dreaming does not count. We dream all the time, every night in the astral world, but we are barely conscious in the astral world while we dream. Mostly our personality itself is kind of disintegrated, you can call it asleep, and our awareness is so shattered by that fact that we cannot maintain the senses together, because the personality, it's a job of the personality to take all our senses and bring them together. If the personality's not there, it's pretty hard to bring all the senses together while we're sleeping and dreaming. And so consequently, we have virtually no consciousness. As an example, someone who dreams usually does not know even who they are. Or if they do, they have a very minimal understanding of that. They don't know what they did before they went to sleep, and they seldom know what they're going to do upon awakening. They barely live in what is known as an isolated present, and with a minimal amount of past information that is fragmented. So they may know some things about their past, like they do and don't want chocolate, but they may have absolutely no understanding of what they did in the physical world the day before, from 1 minute or hour to the next. So that being the case, their consciousness is virtually vacant, and obviously service in terms of dreaming is almost impossible. All right. So outside of those issues, and when a person could say astral travel and remain conscious, fully conscious in the astral world, then we await consciousness in the astral world for when we die. Now, a lot of people are fearful of death. They're afraid of death because they think their consciousness is going to end at death. And the reason for that is they're used to the sleeping experience. Sleep helps to restore our bodies. It helps to allow us to dream, which restructures parts of our brains and restructures some of our senses so that they aren't as filled with retained energy. And so they're going to work a lot better when we awaken. That's a good thing. So sleeping and dreaming are important elements. However, they do provide a kind of negative feedback loop, and let me explain what happens. Every time we fall asleep and lose consciousness and dream, we gain a little bit more fear that death is going to be that condition in which there will be no consciousness. At best, we will dream, and at worst, there will be nothing. And to a sentient being like we are, and particularly one that is fully or mostly self-aware, we find it intolerable to think that we are going to cease to exist at the time of our death. And there's a reason that God created this system that seems so terrorizing to human beings. And let me explain. The the purpose of this fear is to help us find God. We are built, unlike animals below us in the kingdoms, to find God. We're built to understand God with our heart chakra or sense, and we're built to help to create more of God eventually with our crown chakra or sense. And so those two senses are the spiritual senses inside of us. And when they are fully functional, it's a wondrous experience. But until they are, there's a kind of stick and carrot method of moving us in the direction of becoming more spiritual. And the carrot is to find the joy of understanding God and serving in God's light. That's joy. That's terrific. That's the carrot. The stick is every time we fall asleep and dream or not dream, we get more afraid of death and seek out God as comfort and a means of holding us together outside of just our own personality. Personality does not have a means of understanding its own existence unless it joins itself with its soul, which is to us like God, and has a perspective from that side. So, oddly, every night we repair our bodies, our physical cells, and our senses, while we establish a need for God by morning, because we've had this experience of being cut off from ourself. Now, if that sounds kind of harsh, you need to accept that human beings are so conflicted while we're physically alive that without this unusual carrot and stick method, we would not progress in a spiritual way, and our existence would be greatly threatened. So the very idea of what we're here for, which is to grow more of God in the longer sense, and to become a greater part of our soul in each lifetime so that this life is not so terrible for us, requires this push that each of us gets each night. Okay, so for a lot of you, I hope you're not going to get depressed about that idea, because there's another side to this thing, and that is that we are preparing ourselves for greater service, both while we're physically alive and for astral life. No matter how you live the physical life, you're going to get another shot at even greater service in the astral world if you choose to take it. Now, why is that? Well, once we die from the physical world, there still is sleep and even dreaming in the astral world, but a significant less proportion of the time that we are conscious or awake. So the good news is that whole experience is of less of a weight on us. And simultaneously, once we have gone from the physical world to the astral, we realize we're not dead, right? Yeah, and that's a big relief. As a matter of fact, even before we get to the astral world, for some people, they immediately realize while they're in an etheric form. Now, granted, they don't have a physical body anymore, but they have an etheric body. And they realize they're still not dead. That's a big relief. Just that is a tremendous relief. But going on to the astral world is even a bigger. And it helps people to gain this understanding of, gee, I'm still alive. I'm not going to die. And this is not so bad. And it doesn't matter if they end up in the seventh subworld or the first, and we'll get to understanding a little bit about that. No matter where they end up, they still get this amazing, we'll say, realization that, wow, I'm not dead. I'm still conscious. And the good news is that consciousness expands. It becomes greater in the astral world because all of that material stuff is gone. There's no material form that exists in the astral world. Everything is, in some way, pure energy. And that being the case, the energy is of such low density, higher frequency, and a closer phase to God's own thought, that, or I shouldn't say thought, to God's own beingness, because a third part of God is energy. And so that's getting closer to the way God is. The energy is much more responsive to our thoughts, and our thoughts are actually a bit stronger, no matter where we are in the astral world. And so immediately, in relative terms, a person finds themselves in a position of being significantly more conscious than when they die. And then there's another benefit. Once you get into your astral body, for most people, the astral body is in much better condition than their physical body was upon their death, because they abused their physical body much more through their selfishness than they did their astral body. In most circumstances, there are some exceptions to this. But regardless, the chances are that they're going to be significantly more conscious upon arrival in the astral world, which is a good thing, because it leads to the possibility of increased service and the torture of fear of death diminishes rapidly. Now, there's a bad side of that. Remember, we are here and we are got the carrot and stick because we are resistant to looking for God when we're not so afraid. So sometimes some of that gets lost in the process because now we're in the astral world and we're not so afraid anymore because, after all, you're still alive. So the impetus to search for understanding in God and to be a co-server with God may be reduced in some people. That's unfortunate. And it actually happens. Some people go to the astral world and they have such greater capacity immediately upon arrival, but they waste it. They don't use it because they don't have this impetus of the fear of death. It's such a strange thing. So that's one of the unfortunate elements. And I assume that those who are listening tonight will not want to put themselves into that position, because literally decades to centuries of astral time can be lost. And that astral time is real to the person living there, of course, will be lost, or could be lost, just in not having this stick to move us along towards finding God, which would be the fear of death. And eventually the fear of death does come in, because when you start wasting that much time in the astral world, in not pursuing a virtuous life, the body that you're in starts diminishing fairly rapidly, in relative terms, and produces a lot of negative effects on your life. And eventually you say, maybe I'm not so afraid of death, but I'm certainly afraid of this life. It's getting miserable here. And the boredom and certain other things that take place can be very nasty and produce some very, we'll say, motivating issues for a person to give up the life of just being concerned about themselves, pure selfishness, and living in their emotions instead of love. So the astral world has a choice, you can say, that's more defined than the physical, and that is a person either lives their life to become more loving, or they live their life to become more emotional. Now, a more emotional life is selfish, but it isn't necessarily selfish most of the time in gaining material kinds of things, because there's no material things there at all, but the kinds of material things. For a few people it is, or for less than half, by far, of the people who go to the lower astral realms. People don't do that, but some still do, and when they do, they collect things that are similar to what they would have had if they were physically alive. But still, they do so for, again, wrongful reasons. They're doing so because they become engrossed in the emotionality of having things and the emotionality of control and power and many other issues that become negative. And so their life becomes wrapped up in how they feel at any particular time, rather than how they think or whether or not how others around them are feeling. They're only concerned about their own feelings, which is the antithesis of love. And the result is a lot, we'll say, of loss of consciousness, and at the same time, a kind of almost numbness that eventually, this energy they bring into their body eventually blocks off all their senses. And so they keep grasping more and more to have more feeling, when every time they do that, it reduces their ability to feel. It's kind of a strange thing. And eventually they become bored and numb, and then sometimes even become attacked in some places of the astral world. And it really leads to a very hostile negative life. Maybe not as bad as lifetimes can be, certainly, in the physical world, which is a much even harsher place. But nonetheless, more self-aware created. And so people start realizing, gee, I'm producing this. Eventually. It may take 100 years, but it eventually comes to them. Yeah, I made this life this way. There's less illusion, even though there's a great illusion that I just described in the astral world. It's less overall than exists in the physical. So people do eventually get it in most circumstances, but it can be very wasteful. And as far as service is concerned, it definitely blocks that. Now, this is mostly for people who live in the lower subworlds. What are those? But generally the 6th and 7th, sometimes parts of the 5th as well. So people are in these subworlds where they're using limited sense, usually only one sense at a time is used, which for astral senses is a very negative thing on the astral body. And it means that you have some serious glamours that are vibrating in such discordant ways, it blocks off the senses from being able to connect together. And the glamours are what? Fixed desires. Desires for what? Desires for feeling whatever a person wants to feel. And just to getting more and more feeling that keeps cutting down their senses of feeling so that they really become addicted to whatever the glamour is about. Glamours are addictions because of that factor, the feedback. The constant lowering of sense every time a person increases the glamour or gets new ones, that then once causes them to want more feeling, and which then just increases the glamour more. That's the bad news about glamours. All right, so where are we at then? If a person is going to the astral world after the death, of course, they then need to be focused on not feeling how they feel, which unfortunately may have been how they lived their physical life in the first place, but they need to shift to how other people feel and being concerned about the feelings of others. That's love. It's a conditional love because it's about a direction of a specific feeling that a person may or may not be having, and it doesn't encompass the entire person all the time unless a person is a thing called super empathic. Or at least empathic to begin with, and then super empathic. So the difference here is, for a lot of people, they go to the astral world, and they only get a conditional sense of love, instead of the more unconditional, universal love of people as souls, and wanting to co-serve with them, and understanding all of their feelings at the same time, especially their feelings about being a part of God, and therefore wanting to share that experience with others. This is a big issue for people when they serve in the astral world, because those that serve best in the astral world serve more universally in love. Those that serve least, but still might serve, serve only on the conditional element of love, where only one feeling at a time, only one element of a person's sensory apparatus is being used at the time, both from the person loving and from the person being loved. And it's a very limited form of virtue. It's the common form of virtue, though, in the astral world, because at the present time, the astral world is created almost entirely by human beings. And the world is the nature of the human beings on the planet that the astral world is associated with. Our planet is relatively primitive, especially about this issue about feelings. Former race before us failed to unify its astral senses, and therefore has always split the feelings into a conditional form of love, which is the love we think of more often than not. And the result is that the astral world, by nature, since it's created by us, really, we create most of the astral world, is nothing more than a conditional love experience until you get to the spiritual subworlds, which we'll talk more about in a little while. So, in looking at this process, although people go to the astral world, they are more conscious. They can maintain that consciousness and increase it, and increase their service to others. They can live, in some respects, as a serving being, but they serve far less of the time in light, and more in the time in the kind of, we'll call it, limited light that the astral world presently contains, which is very conditional love. And that's what a lot of people do, especially if they are not serving in the spiritual subworlds. So if they're serving in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, kind of, there's not much service there, but let's say they are, or seventh subworlds, the results are that less and less, going in the descending order, real service is taking place, and most of it is very limited service that is not spiritual in its completion. It doesn't have effortlessness involved with it. It takes effort on the parts of those inhabitants in those worlds most of the time to be able to serve, because they create forces against themselves due to the conditional nature of how they love. They love in a conditional way. If there's a condition on your love, then there's a force that you've produced against yourself in doing that love. And eventually you will wear out your senses, even though you're in service to others. That service is going to adversely affect you in some way, as it will those that you serve. Your service will not be complete. It won't be joining the others with God. It won't lead them to finding God in the highest sense. In a limited sense, some ways, that will. For those of you familiar with the principles, we'll call it a synthetic yoga or mental yoga, they're mostly serving from what is called the third tier of thought. Now, that for some of you, that may not make any sense, but that's okay. And so they're serving from a limited part of conceptual thinking, the concepts, getting away from the feelings for a minute, the concepts that are being used have, again, instead of a wide spectrum of examples, a very narrow spectrum of examples that are truthful, and the rest of them fall outside of the truth. So, unfortunately, it only works sometimes in some ways and then fails. All right, so back to astral life then. If people are in service in the astral world, they mostly, if they are not serving in the spiritual subworld, they're serving in ways that produce some kind of conditional love in other people and helps them to become more conditionally loving themselves. And gradually, usually over dozens to hundreds of years of time, a person moves towards the conditional side of love to a less and less conditional one as the glamours that are inside of them start to go away. And they do become a little more spiritually, we'll say, disciplined. And the results are that they can find a method of service that may be somewhat unconditional in their loving approach. Then they're loving more as a soul, and they're starting to function a bit more soul-like. That could take way over half of the lifetime before a person even starts doing that in any one of these lower subworlds. So that's the problem. Now, you could say, well, isn't the third subworld then better than the fourth, and the fourth better than the fifth? Well, kind of. It's just that different glamours take hold of people in those different subworlds. And depending upon how much time they spend focused on their glamours, they may not be of any greater service if they're in the third subworld than the fourth or the fifth. Generally speaking, people in the fourth subworld have a tendency, a little earlier in their life to realize that they are not serving in a way that's unconditional, and that their love is too conditional, and it kind of makes them feel sick to their stomach because of they're noticing their own hypocrisies. And so they may actually change more rapidly towards wanting to join the service of those in one of the spiritual subworlds, usually the second, than someone who's living on the third subworld. It's odd because those people usually have higher consciousness per se, but they don't use their consciousness in ways that isn't destructive. So over time, they may become more and more disabled. So it's kind of a strange effect. So they may be more conscious at the beginning of their life in the third astral subworld, but actually drop in consciousness precipitously as they get older. Older could be hundreds and hundreds of years of time, but nonetheless, it's a kind of an odd effect, and it has more of an effect, you know, like I said, to those in the third subworld than usually people living in the fourth. Interesting. Those in the fifth are almost always behind people in the third and the fourth, because the consciousness in that subworld is relying very heavily on just one sense being used at a time. You have to use no less than three senses of the five of form at a time to reach the fourth subworld or the third. So there's a conditional issue change in how you're using your senses to even maintain consciousness in those higher subworlds. Much more difficult. A lot of people don't make it to the fourth subworld. It is actually the largest subworld now associated with Earth. Literally, it isn't a majority of people, but a plurality of people maintain a consciousness high enough to reach the fourth subworld after their death, which is just amazing. That's really good. The bad news is the third subworld hasn't been doing so great due to egotism in our present race. And so if it could catch up with where the fourth is in terms of numbers, the whole world would change. But that would take breaking something called the Kama-Manasseh connection, or at least we'll say diminishing it. And then we haven't had that occur enough on Earth. If very few people have achieved it. So the results are that at the present time, we're faced with this dilemma in terms of these different subworlds. Now, for some of you, if you're new listeners, some of this is sounding like, whoa, this guy's going pretty fast here. But, you know, this first part of the program is, again, conceptual and less pragmatic and less exemplified. So if you don't get it, don't worry. In another 10 minutes, I'm going to shift gears and we'll be talking about examples, which will be easier to follow than the concepts that I'm using. And some of the concepts are connected to things I've taught in the past. If you haven't heard an earlier show, you might be scratching your head and saying, well, this might be too much for me. But hold on. It'll get a little easier as we go on. Okay, so looking at how this whole thing plays out, it sounds like, and it is true, that Earth is pretty well stuck in a problem, and that is that we really only have one subworld that is even resembling what might be spiritual service that's lower than the two highest, which we haven't even got to yet. And that subworld is still not even the majority of people who die. So we are behind the eight ball, so to speak, in terms of glamours controlling us, our fixed desires controlling us, and wanting to just feel good in our definition of it when we die. And wanting to feel good is unfortunately a relatively seductive position for people to get into, and once they're there, it takes as much as hundreds of years to get out of it. So, what do you want to alarm yourself to about what I've just said? Well, the first thing is, when you get to the astral world, the last thing you want to do is be concerned about your feelings, because it's so seductive. Once you get into the spiral, even a few days of it can lock you into months or years of trying to get out of it. So if you have the awareness, like from a program like this or a book or whatever, or if you try to live somewhat that way while you're physically alive, that's particularly important. Or if you come to the consciousness of what I'm saying right before you die, it's also important. Those all come together to help you to beat off this position of being controlled by your feelings and your desires. And that gives you a better chance. So when you get there, you don't get suckered in. No matter which subworld you end up in, it's the same issue. So trying to maintain consciousness by being more loving in an unconditional way and by being of service to others, that's particularly true. And I'm talking about spiritual service now, where it's effortless, where you're really not even creating any forces inside yourself or others through what you're giving to them. That means you're giving in a way which is called wise giving. You're using your mind to help control your astral body rather than your astral feeling controlling your mind, which is called kama manasik. That's a really good position to be in. Now, what happens if you arrive in the astral world and you're kind of teetering? You know, you're going, I would like to feel good, and I could get any desire meant. Maybe I'll try that for a few weeks or months. And then, well, there was that guy on the radio. He told me if I do that, I'm probably going to screw up my astral life, and it's going to be really nasty for hundreds of years. Maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I should go ahead and try to be of service now. And I'll worry about feeling whatever my desires are later. In other words, you give up your selfish position. If you do that, good news is about to be told. Ready? What happens is, this is a signal. There's a certain state of feeling mind, we'll call it, that happens that shows the kama manasa connection is being slightly broken by at least one person at a time. And that signal can be heard and felt, actually, by those who are in service in higher worlds. And they will come to you. Isn't that amazing? They will come to you. Especially if you say, hey, the guy on the radio said you're going to come to me. Where are you? And they'll just appear. And when they appear, they provide immediate service to those who are struggling to serve, to help them to serve better. Wow. Really? And this is automatic and almost infallible in terms of it taking place. So you're not alone if you choose the path of God. I mean, literally. Talk about grace. This has got to be the ultimate grace, right? All of this is coming together so that you're being given to and given other chances to be closer to your Creator if you so choose. Even if it's for a very short time, you might only do this for an hour. In that hour, boom, someone will appear from another part of the astral plane, and they will be a server. And they will say, hey, I know you need some help. I'm here to be of some service to you. If you happen to astral travel, which means you're still physically alive, you could have the same experience, but when you get there, you've got to have the same attitude. Your attitude has to be, yeah, I'm here to serve. And then bingo, bango, someone comes to you and serves and helps you out. And usually they are the ones of higher consciousness. They can be from the same subworld or they can be from a higher one. It just depends on what your needs are and who's available, so to speak. But it's an amazing experience. And it might be rare, depending upon what subworld you're in. But rarity or not, it's still available, and it's a very good thing. Really. Well, at this point, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be coming back here in about 2.5 minutes, and I'll get into some other elements about what I just talked about, but it'll be a lot easier, and it'll be more exemplified. So we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the life of service in the astral world. And if you missed the first part, well, you missed a lot of interesting concepts, but it was one of those brain teasers, you know, that I usually do. And I thought now I'll still talk about concepts, but it won't be quite as difficult maybe to follow. And so a person, when they die, they go on to live a life of service that they're more capable of doing, provided that they choose to give up their desires, their fixed desires, sometimes referred to as glamours, that are stuck inside their astral body, that are blocking their sense, and removing the ability to join their senses so their consciousness can grow, and that they can, therefore, spiritually serve, which means not retain any energy in the service that they give. And the retention of energy causes forces inside their bodies, outside their astral body, which causes that body to age and fall apart, become diseased possibly. So a lot of problems come from retaining energy. And you don't want to do that, especially when you're trying to serve, because you are dealing with high levels of energy. And if you create forces from that, you can do a lot of damage to yourself. People always wonder, why is it that people at the beginning of their spiritual life sometimes get ill? Well, because for that lifetime, and sometimes some additional ones from that point forward, the person is making the mistake of trying to spiritually serve, but they're not really doing it. They're kind of conditionally serving, and the results are they create a lot of illness inside themselves and aging caused by the retention of energy. Because some of the energy, the huge amount of energy in service, is not going freely, effortlessly out to those that they're serving. Instead, it's getting retained in their own bodies, and possibly in the bodies of those that they're trying to serve. So it's the rationale of the whole situation. Okay, now we ended with the idea that when you get to the astral world, if you do choose to serve, which is in serving in a spiritual way, which hopefully you have done some practice at before you left the physical world, you have a much better chance of succeeding when if you've done some of it while you're in the physical world, then the results are going to be that you get help. You get help from sources that are beyond where your consciousness is. They could be humans, It can be superhumans, and superhumans have different categories. It can be your own soul, depending upon its level of development, or more likely, your alter ego of your soul, sometimes referred to as the inner guide or it's a lunar angel. Think of it as still your soul, but it's kind of like its own being. And it could also come from members of the next kingdom referred to as masters of the ageless wisdom, usually associated, though, with the planet that you're living on, in this case, Earth. So those are the sources that usually come to help. Are there other ones? Yes. Depending upon your level of development, you can get help from your own monad. Now, that's a little hard to understand. That means that you're a spiritual disciple and you're in the accepted stage of development in the part of leaving the human kingdom. And when you're in that stage, you can get help directly from your monad, bypassing the next kingdom altogether. And this comes right from the monad. That's pretty cool, too. But it is only for a select few. Not because they have done a great job spiritually serving or not, although certainly most of them have, but because they're at this stage called the accepted stage where they get this help. All right. And then where else, what other sources are available? Well, I know this is a little hard to grasp, but, I mean, it's always possible that any source above the human, all the way to God itself as a being, can be of service to a human being. The further the source is in consciousness from a human being, the more restricted its ability to be of direct help in helping us to serve. But it still can. It still can. So I want to leave all options open because they are available. It's just that it usually goes to the lowest of consciousness that can be of service first rather than to the highest. And it just makes sense that the highest would not be trying to do something that's something lower in consciousness than it could be doing, because it would rob the lower one from that opportunity, and that opportunity is an important one. Okay, and it would drain the resources of those higher in consciousness. All right, so this whole process is designed to develop a human being into a soul. The whole thing is designed to do that. Think of it as a roadmap. And the roadmap is, you are with your soul. You are your soul at the beginning of the process, okay? And you say to yourself as a soul, time to take a piece of myself and create a human being. That human being will have a new personality different from the last personality that I created as a human being. And you're going to do this hundreds of times, somewhere between probably 650, 700, and 1,000 times you're going to do it. So it's a lot. The number 777 is a magical number. Supposedly some people do it in that number of times. I think it's very few because it's all over the map. But at any rate, so you're going to be doing it. And the first thing you realize is that you can't leave where you're at. The soul is in a very, very limited place in the higher mental world. And it's right in the middle of the higher mental world. And it can't move from that position, really, in its consciousness. And it's dependent upon its alternate, we'll say, helping ego, the solar angel, to even lend its ability to think using the rest of the causal mind. So it's really very limited in what it can do. And we as souls, if we imagine ourselves in that position, have to get out of there and get all the way to physical Earth to be of service to grow born of God in these denser regions, where if we were to come here as souls, we would become just as illusioned as the piece of us does that we call a human being. So the soul is no better off than we would be if it were here, just suddenly thrown into this environment. It would be become just as illusioned. Because that's exactly what it is. We are our soul to begin with. We come here as a part of our soul, and we lose consciousness. We lose the ability to understand what we came here for. We actually knew it before we came, and we forgot it before we got here. Okay? And you can say, well, why did we forget it? Well, because our senses are so separated when we arrive here, unless we've done an amazing job in prior lifetimes of changing that, because we have spiritual genes that dictate this. And so we just have a lack of awareness of virtually everything around us and misunderstand almost everything about this world and ourselves and of God. And we're here to get all that back and more. So we have to very quickly recover it, and we do in the first two to three decades of our life. But in the process of recovery, we also may become inordinately selfish. We may become destructive to our ability to serve, and who knows what else. So it's a big challenge. Those that have gained traction in the process have such good spiritual genes that they're born with their senses somewhat, called semi-unified in their physical body, well, in their etheric physical body. And the results are that they get a big jump on it. And maybe even as a child, they may do some level of spiritual service. Rare, but not impossible. And so you move that far ahead that fast, then by the time you are a spiritual adult, which is usually considered after the age of 28, your life is a totally different kind of life than those people that are living around you. And this journey of the soul is to eventually create an enlightened physical world. Earth is far from that right now. I don't think I have to remind anybody of that. But and so is the astral world, which is more or less created by human beings. Animals provide a little bit, and plants, but really, it's created by human beings. If you remove human beings, there'd be very little going on in the astral world. And if you remove the higher, more sentient animals, there'd be almost nothing. The astral world just about vanishes, and there's not much going on there. The same would be true of the lower mental world, because there's so little activity in the lower mental world that is other than human. So basically, it's us. This construction of the three lower worlds is really all about us interacting with those three lower worlds to produce some really great results. The great results are supposed to be, I guess you call it heaven on earth. Earth being the lower mental, astral, and etheric physical worlds. And that's true. That is where earth exists, really. And so when we think of a planet, it isn't just a physical thing. It's all these other worlds around the planet that are in other dimensions that combine together to make the planet a thing, a real living thing. And so we are here to try to bring light into these worlds. When we die from the physical world and go to the astral, the challenge for us then becomes to finally, we'll say, reach a point where we have at least some semblance of why we're here. In other words, the name of the show in the astral world is kind of like the second name for most people who live there, especially if they live above the fifth subworld. Weird, in this world, the name of this show, Why Life is almost meaningless. So it's meaningless to most people because they don't get why life is. They think why life is to have fun, to have things, to own things, to not only feel good, but to have security and power and control and you name it. That's what they're about. So it's to them, they have replaced God with these things that are the distractions of split senses and damage to the bodies, all of it caused by the illusion. And the only way you get away from it is to enlighten the whole world that you're in to some level. You start around yourself with light, and as you enlighten the space that you're in, you then create enough elements of God so that others can start seeing it in you, as an example, while you then give to them what they need to be more creative themselves, of it for themselves, around themselves. Do you follow all that? Yeah, okay. So that's the process we're in. We're trying to do this every place we live. We generally fail right now, on an average, miserably fail. In the physical world, we generally do so-so in the astral world. And we do not too badly in the mental world, but not great. So this is the present level, we'll call it, of spiritual service. And although some of it is not spiritual, the service part still might apply to help us to make those baby steps to becoming more and more spiritual. And the more we can get to a true spiritual level of service, the faster we move. So instead of 100 lifetimes, it could be 3. You know, it doesn't have to be these huge number of lifetimes that we suffer so much in. Some people call it the wheel of karma, whatever. You know, it's kind of got all these different names, which to me don't really explain it, because it's about us just being an illusion. That's basically it. Illusion is all the lies that we create for ourselves about our existence. And the answer to why life is always wrong, or almost always wrong. This show is to try to correct that illusion. See? And so that's what it's here for. I don't know if they're getting it in the astral world, but because the energy of the show can't get there. Only the feelings from people and their creative imagination after they hear the show can get to the astral world. But that may be enough, by the way. That has some benefits, too. You can come from those below, but it's rare for that to happen. Okay, so let's talk about some examples of life in the astral world so we can come to some, we'll say, better understanding about it without getting too much more conceptual. When we arrive in the astral world, the place that we end up in is always dependent upon how we've last lived our life in the physical world. And that's our consciousness. If we look at the process of how this is moving, then, someone ends up in the astral world, and regardless of where they end up, they have this quandary. Service or non-service. Spiritual service or not-so-spiritual service. Both of those are different issues. When a person goes to the seventh subworld, now that's the lowest subworld you can end up in, they're using their lowest single sense, which is called the sexual chakra, some people call it that. And it's a chakra that's composed mostly of energy of the seventh ray variety, okay? When someone ends up there, their biggest problem is going to be glamours, mostly about having material things and sexuality. But sexuality more from the standpoint of having it rather than feeling it. It's kind of a strange thing, isn't it? And so sex to them may be a thing about control and power and other things. And this is the dominant issue. And if someone goes there and they want to serve, it's going to be very difficult for them because this is a very gross form of selfishness. And most people that go to the seventh subworld don't do any kind of service, either conditional or unconditional. And that's unfortunate, of course. But they're given the opportunity nonetheless, and you should be aware of this. So if in the last year of their life, they made some inroads of being aware of the selfishness in themselves, uncovering the illusions about it, and made any kind of changes, the chances are they still got it. Chance. When they get there to the seventh astral subworld to break out of it, literally, and move to a higher subworld. It's possible to do that. And even better, the most important thing, is that they might start spiritually serving, or not spiritually, they might start serving, somewhat conditionally. Spiritual service would be very rare for people to go to the seventh subworld and spiritually serve. But they might start serving, and if they do, they might get some help from someone, say, from the fourth subworld, or the third, or even higher spiritual subworld. And that, in those situations, they literally travel. They also travel to the lower subworld and help these folks out. How many are doing that? Not very many. But they are there. There are folks there. So even for the people who are most lost, so to speak, engrossed in almost evil but not evil, they have some chance, they have some possibility of moving ahead and moving in a direction that has a, we'll say, a more positive possibilities of coming up. And I want you to get this sense, like, wow, there's really some hope even for the really people who are very selfish. I'm talking about really selfish people. People who have lived their life for material things, money, and get more of it, more things than you could possibly imagine, maybe, and sex in a way of control and power than just the feeling of it, and a lot of other things that deal with, we'll say, the more gross elements of material existence that doesn't exist per se, but can be recreated in the creative thought of a person who goes to the seventh subworld. Now, the good news is that you can get help. The bad news is you're very close to the A sphere, because it's actually part of the seventh subworld. It's where the evil folks are. Now, they do not have any hope of being helped by anyone in service. You see, when you're evil, you have given up your right to get that by choosing to separate yourself from your soul and therefore from God, and you're actually an adversary of God. So, unfortunately, the only people who cannot be helped in this system, who really are beyond the help of anyone else in the astral world, are folks in the A sphere, the evil ones. And you could say, well, then they don't get grace, right? Well, they do if they choose on their own, which is a harder choice because no one's going to help them, to reconnect with their soul. Then they can get out of the A sphere and maybe get some help while they're still in the seventh subworld. And there's some help then available to them. But most folks don't. Most of the evil ones stay evil. Yeah, they do. Because it's so hard to make that choice without any help. And the A sphere is so blocked from all light that nobody could get there to serve. You can only go there and observe, and only under rare circumstances is that permissible. So, you know, it's a terrible thing, but basically those folks have got themselves one heck of a pickle. They will eventually get out of it. There's several different ways, but the point is it's going to be very, very bad for them. Not eternal damnation, but something close. Not eternal damnation, no. I don't know of any condition that produces that, but something that's pretty bad. So those folks can't be helped. The rest of the folks, the rest of the people, and I really say this in a sense, the people are those who are not evil, because evil have given up their rights to be human. They actually are moving backwards in their part of the animal kingdom. Isn't that weird? Yeah, they have damaged their senses to the point where they can no longer be considered human because they don't have enough sense to be human. They have lost at least part of one of their two spiritual senses and also some part, usually, of their five senses of non-spiritual, or we'll call it form. And so that they're no longer human, really. Now, they may be subhuman, and some have actually gone beyond that and actually are truly animals. Weird. Animals with kind of human evil thought, but still more like animals. All right. So when we move out of the seventh subworld, we're moving away from this harmful condition of always having these evil folks, evil beings, trying to entrap the rest of the seventh subworld, which is what they're trying to do. And there's always a contest going on between good and evil in that realm, I mean, truly. You've got the servers who are brave enough to go to the seventh subworld to serve, fighting pretty close directly to the evil ones who are trying to convince the people there that they shouldn't listen to the servers and they should go their way. So that's what's going on there, and that's not a good thing at all. And it's close. It's close in. The seventh subworld is just a nasty place. And you can get out of it. Usually it's the people for the last year of their physical life who made some inroads. They did something that really makes a difference. Okay, we'll come back to this, the rest of this in the rest of the show. I just wanted to mention to you, if you haven't had a chance, you should try Fai Chi Jizik. Now, why do I say that? First of all, I'm taking it for reasons outside of pain, and I find it works. And you might say, what are those reasons? Well, it improves circulation. It can strengthen all the organs in your body. It can do a lot of things that are good. Now, that doesn't mean you take huge quantities all the time. You may take a moderate amount three times a day or twice a day. And I found that it has some benefits to using it in that way. If you haven't heard of it before, it restructures the chi energy inside your body and bodies, and it actually improves the state of health and the general state of sense that we have. You can go to buyjizik.com. That's all one word, buyjizik.com. Or you can call 602-431-5762, and you can try some. You can order some. If it doesn't work for you, you can get your money back. Yeah. Whenever you paid for it, you get it back. Because I want you to, but the people who make it want you to find it works. You know, if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. It won't work for everybody. If you're addicted to drugs, particularly, it may be difficult for it to work in you. It may still be of some benefit. Smokers will get less benefit than non-smokers, right? Because that's another addiction and it's a drug. But it's worth a try, even if you smoke or even if you're addicted to some terrible drug. But generally speaking, if you are addicted to pain medications, and particularly narcotics, you got to get off those before Jesus is going to do much good for you. Okay, we're coming back. I got a lot to say tonight, so I can't say too much more about anything else. And let's talk about the sixth subworld. People who go to the sixth subworld and they are attempting to do some kind of service have a much better chance than those who end up in the seventh subworld because they're not so close to the dark ones. And the dark ones can still reach them. Don't get me wrong. They can reach to the seventh or the sixth subworld. But there's less chance that they're going to reach out and touch you, so to speak. And the thing about the sixth subworld that unfortunately is so seductive is that the ray energy is the same corresponding energy as the astral world itself, which is six ray energy. And this makes it difficult for some people to give up the desire for feeling, which is what the whole astral world is about in general, and it's exaggerated and emphasized in the sixth subworld. So if that's your problem, you got to really work at it when you get to the sixth subworld. It helps if the last year or less sometimes, but a person before they died, if they really were working on giving up their selfish desires for some feelings of service, wanting to serve others, and the joy of doing so. And if they've done that with some real love in their heart, they may do much better. Even though they'll end up in the sixth subworld, they'll do much better. And they will definitely get help. And the chances of getting out of the sixth subworld will be good. Now, the level of spiritual service will still be mixed with non-spiritual. But at least there's a good chance that a person can actually elevate themselves to a higher subworld. Maybe just to the fifth. But any subworld higher is better. And you're still using one sense. You're using the solar plexus center in sense. And this is creating, then, a new focus from the seventh subworld, of course. And people in the seventh subworld probably say, well, I'd rather be in the sixth, of course. But maybe not, because they don't necessarily jump to the sixth. If they do better, they usually go to the fifth. At any rate, people on the sixth generally find that service is best accomplished for them when they do a lot of contemplation and reflection, a lot of meditation. Now, why is that? Well, because the world is so frenetic. It's hard to get involved in the activities of the world until you have calmed yourself down. unlike the seventh subworld, which is not so frenetic. The sixth is like crazy. I mean, the energy is bouncing off of every place because the people are so emotionally active. The emotional activeness actually affects all the forms. Sometimes the forms are vibrating violently, even when people are in them, so to speak. People may make a house or go in the house, and the house is vibrating. Yeah? They can't stop it because it's coming from themselves and those around them. It's a difficult place from that standpoint. So quieting yourself allows you to find other people, usually in villages or town-like environments, who have quieted the whole area. You can join them. You won't find them. I literally can't find them if you aren't quiet yourself. They're almost like isolated into their own little cubby holes of the astral world. The astral world is very huge, and it's hard to go someplace that you haven't been before unless your nature, the nature of you, draws you there. That's where it helps to have this quieting. If you end up in the sixth subworld, the first thing you want to do is quiet yourself. Maybe a week or two before you try any service at all, because wherever you're at, it's going to be too difficult to service. And what will happen is if you try to service in that locale, those around you are going to be probably not amenable, and you may get trapped in the frenetic nature of the surroundings. Difficult, very difficult. The other thing as far as any kind of service in the sixth subworld is concerned, the other thing to realize is that whatever forms you create, unless you isolate yourself by a considerable margin, others are going to immediately use, abuse, and destroy. Now, if you don't want that to happen, again, the isolation model applies. Find someplace distant, meditate, get yourself together, get away from people to begin with for a few weeks maybe, and then go and find those that are like yourself who have a desire to be of service over the selfish needs to feel. That won't get rid of all your glamours. You have to use the energy in your glamours to actually do the service, but it will quell them. They'll go down. And it gives you a chance to then be of some service. And when you're in the quieting state, someone will come to you who is a server from a higher region or area, and they'll be of service to you. So that's another good reason to try that approach in the sixth subworld. Okay, and then let's move on, because there's so much to talk about the spiritual subworlds. I want to get through these lower ones so we get some grasp of what the context is of people's service there. In the fifth subworld, people are stuck in being very rule-oriented and having, we'll say, their desires are to have things their way. It may not be good for everybody else, but it's their way. And they like it when others have their way as well, so they hang out with others who are equally of selfish nature. It's a very strange thing. So if someone wants to be selfish in a specific way, say they just want a nice, quiet neighborhood to live in and have all the things that they used to enjoy, but in an easier level while they were physically alive, that's the people that hang out with in the astral world. They're not going to be doing much service. Some others want to be off doing their own thing with no rules, but that's a rule. I don't want any rules. Okay, but that's the same as having rules, because you don't want any rules. So you got, and those folks have their own problems because they only want freedom for themselves. They don't care about freedom for anybody else. They don't love anybody, really. They just want to be free. Yeah. And they're kind of almost in the hippie realm, you might say. And sometimes they live together, but they have disjointed lives. And they don't truly serve because it's sporadic at best, and most of the time they're more concerned about being free, and if they have to serve, then they have to follow somebody else's rules or something else about what someone else needs, and they're more concerned about themselves. Unfortunate, but true. You get there, first thing to do is if you can, find the older folks who live there. What? Yeah, fine. There are sections of people who have been there for hundreds of years. Those are the people that you want to have contact with to begin with. Might do good to do a little bit of meditation, but even better would be to find the people who have been there for hundreds of years. They hang out together. Now, yes, they have a lot of senses that have been damaged. Those are the people you could be of service to, though, because your senses are going to be better. And those folks actually want to love. They just have trouble doing it because their senses are damaged. And they will be more amenable to you. They live their lives with all the rules and restrictions and having things exactly the way they wanted it, with everybody else having the same agreement of selfishness. And they realize that all that did is destroy their bodies, destroy their senses, cause them to live a meager life without much meaning, and now they're looking for something better. Those are the folks to seek out and to hang out with. Your chances of then developing a life of at least conditional service of love are pretty good, because they're already doing some of that. And they'll love the fact that your senses are so much better than theirs, and you're willing to lend them some of that so that all can improve their level of service. So that's a little tidbit of information. Now, if you're taking notes and say, well, if I'm going, this is where I'm gonna, what I'm going to do. This is what I'm doing. This is a practical model of what to do when you get there, sort of speaking. That's why I try to make this part of the show more practical, because people actually do want to have some idea of what to do. Now, you could say, well, okay, what about the other servers? Will they come and help too? Yeah, sure. But they help groups, usually. They don't normally, if you go and work with the older folks, these servers appear and they help the whole group serve instead of just helping you individually, although they can do that too. It's up to them to see what is needed and how they do it. They try to be as efficient as possible and may help a number of people at the same time. That can't be done in the 6 and 7 subworlds. You won't ever get a group of people together that would be that you'd ever be able to do that with. But in the 5th, it's possible. And the good news is that some of the people in the 5th subworld actually leave for the 4th before they die. And it's a great joy to them to be able to do that. Some of them can't stay awake very long. They may leave for a day or two and then back in the 5th. It's always a sadness, but after continuing to try to serve more and more, they eventually can stay longer and longer, and they may be able to permanently remain in the 4th subworld. And this is really the goal of many older folks. You might find some younger ones who are in that position too, working with you, with the older folks. That's even better. How many are doing that these days? Well, I don't astral travel. I haven't for a long time any longer. I mean, we're talking about, you know, decades since I've been into doing that. Those of you who have read this work I've done in that area have read what has happened many years, many decades ago, actually. So, yeah, I'm a little older than you might think. Or maybe not. But anyway, the point is that the people who are doing this now, I would assume, have grown even from what I saw. So there may be even more younger people that are working together with the people who are older and have lost their sense to achieve the results of at least conditional love and then eventually unconditional love, in which they are truly serving in light. And that would be a fantastic thing. If it has grown, I don't know for sure. But this is the thing. If you follow these suggestions, you can make a tremendous accomplishment in terms of helping yourself and others at the same time to grow more quickly instead of wasting hundreds of years of astral life in a 5th subworld environment where your life is about as meaningless as, you know, a rock sitting and doing nothing. You can develop a meaningful life very quickly. Very quickly. And again, the same thing applies about having the last year of your life. You know, I'm giving people hope. It's better if it's the last 5 years, 10 years, but even if it's the last year or less of your life where you made the changes Make the changes now. There's never a better time than now. Then your chances of service in the astral subworlds are going to be better. And if you get to the fifth subworld, you got a really good chance. Good chance of meeting up with some of the older inhabitants. And you'll find them. They will find you, or you'll find them, because that's the way the astral world works. And you'll be able to very quickly do some service, which is a great thing. So keep that option open. Okay, let's move on to the fourth subworld. The fourth subworld is where the plurality of people end up, who live in, we'll say, more conscious parts of Earth today. It's actually the largest in population of all the astral subworlds in the present day. And the good news is that if you got there, you're going to live a better than average existence, and certainly better than the life you had while you were physically alive. And most of the people in the fourth subworld are concerned about consciousness. They want to look like they have higher consciousness. The problem is that many of them are more concerned about how they appear in terms of their consciousness to others than what they do in service. So if they look like they're serving, or they look like they're conscious, that's good enough for them. Now, you need three of the senses together to get there, and it's not easy to do, because you have to join these senses together without there being much glamour. And a lot of people have done it, because it deals with the physical realities more than the other three senses that have to be joined to get to the third. And so you're dealing with a kind of problem that you most likely solved the last couple decades of your life while you were physically alive. What the kinds of problems does? Well, sexuality is not abused as much, particularly if you grew older while you were physically alive. It's more difficult for people who are younger, but still it's something they can accomplish. And when I say you get over problems of sexuality, one of them is monogamy. Human beings have a great difficulty being monogamous. Why? Because they feel, and this is more true of men than women, they feel that sexuality is based upon the attraction that they have towards another person in terms of sexuality, rather than sexuality being based upon the ability to be close to another person and the feelings that you get in sharing that closeness. If it's the second thing I said, they won't have any problems with monogamy. If it's the first thing, you're going to have major problems with monogamy. So, and that's the majority of people actually are in the first camp. And so they have a lot of problems with monogamy. And so it's an epidemic. And then they take that over to the astral world. Now, about half the people that go to the fourth subworld still have some problems with monogamy, but they are aware of them, and they try to mitigate them to some extent, depending upon how they lived the last decade or two of their lives, and how long they lived, and a lot of other things. So if you lived a longer life, it's easier. If you lived a shorter life, it's more difficult. And so that is still there, but that center is usually fused. It usually gets fused. And the good news is that when it gets fused, you get some fusion with the fourth ray energy center, the sacral center. And that turns the sexuality around to a reflective side. And you're more concerned then about how the other person is feeling than how you're feeling, or at least you're equally concerned. And that modifies this, we'll say, albatross that humans have presently on Earth. There'll be a time when this won't be a problem for us. But at our present level of development, it is a big problem, actually. And so that particular series of glamours and those illusions are dealt with better in the fourth subworld than they are below, because there's a joining of the centers before you even get there, which is good news. What else? Well, you also have people overcoming their desire for just feeling good. They want to be more creative besides just feeling good. And so because of the need and desire to be creative, even if they have glamours about being creative, it breaks through and it gets these and solar plexus center to get kind of joined in on this thing. And so you don't have the weightiness, the problems and separation and illusion that you have in the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh subworlds. And the fifth subworld has this need to be powerful, to use power to either control others or power to prevent others from controlling you. That's about what I was talking about with the freedom and versus the rules and all that stuff. It's all about power. It comes from the throat chakra. But the good news is that in the fourth subworld, that is not the weight that it has, because you don't have the other centers drawing you into the other glamours. As long as you get rid of enough glamours, enough of these fixed desires inside of you, you have a better chance of dealing with the ones that remain. And that's what happens in the fourth subworld. It's kind of like you've kind of reached the tipping point, where you've got a shot, because you can join three of your centers together. You've got a shot at actually, on a regular basis, living some service within your life. And spiritual service, maybe if you can get over hypocrisy. And we might say, well, where is that hypocrisy coming from? The hypocrisy comes from the fact that people do this still for themselves instead of for God. And their service is more often for themselves than for even the others that they're serving, although they want to do some of both. They still aren't souls yet. They aren't functioning as souls. And so the heart chakra is missing and the crown chakra is missing, and you just don't have all of the elements that you would want to have joined to be able to live in a higher subworld. And so these people are kind of, they've over the tipping point, they're going to more likely do some service in their life. I would say that's almost a truism for almost everybody that makes it to the fourth subworld, but probably more conditional service than spiritual service for almost all the inhabitants. When they reach the point where they do more spiritual service than conditional service, they usually are able to free themselves and go to the second subworld, which we will talk about. And not go to the third, they just bypass. But at any rate, so that's the options there. Now you could say, well, okay, give me some pointers. I get to the fourth subworld. The first thing to deal with is hypocrisy. Notice it in others. Because when people first get there, they get very glamored by everybody around them pretending like they're so spiritual. They think, oh, well, this must be heaven. I'll just pretend like I'm like them. You know, they're all pretending, so I'll pretend, and everybody will be happy. But the problem is that for decades and even centuries, they may spend their time doing this, and it is bad news. It's not good. Their body still aches. They still get damage of their senses, and they still lose consciousness. They can avoid this, and the way you can avoid it, if you get there, is to not be hypocritical. What is hypocrisy? Hypocrisy is pretension. It's like wanting to look like something you're not. Wanting to be something you're not by pretense. And when you see it in others, the first thing is to reject it. Now, how do you reject it? Well, when anybody comes up to you in the fourth subworld, and you could interact with anybody and everybody, unlike in the lower subworld, as soon as people interact with you, if someone is showing pretense, you say, you know, that feels, and I think it's pretentious what you're saying. And you directly conflict yourself with them. And you can say, well, you're not going to have very many friends if I do that. That's true in the beginning. But what's going to happen is, you then are becoming a model of service to them, and at the same time, you're not allowing yourself to become a hypocrite, which is the bigger danger if you don't do that. So it's really important to kind of, you know, grab the tail of the tiger and just not let go and say, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. I certainly can be wrong, but I need to let you know what my experience is, even though I'm just new here and everything else. And you just let people know that are doing this. And if they're not doing it, they'll be humble And they'll say, let me think about that, and you might be right, and I could see that, et cetera. You might make some real good friends, real good people that might be co-servers with you. And for the rest of them, you might get some excuses and some but this and that, but still, you'll be helping them and in service to them. And you won't make enemies. A lot of people might think they might, but they won't make very many enemies in the force of world. People don't want to look that way. Even if they are hypocrites, they're not going to become very hostile towards you, because that would really be an enigma for them in that region. And they might end up then going, because if they have that kind of animus, they might end up going to the fifth subworld to live. You can do that. You can go backwards and move down to the fifth subworld, where people do have that. They have all kinds of envies, angers, hostilities towards each other, and everything else. It's pretty much vacant in the fourth subworld. So you can afford to try this method that I'm suggesting, and it'll safeguard you from becoming like that, which is definitely not the way that you want to go. Also, servers that go to the fourth subworld have classes, so you can attend them. You don't even have to wait for a server to pop in. You can literally just desire yourself to be in attendance to a class, and you will pop into the class, literally. Even though you haven't been there before, you'll be drawn there by the strength of your own desire and will to see a service, and their thought will direct you. It actually works. And you will find what you need in that way. And some of these classes, you know, have many people in them. And you get to meet all the people then who are like you, who are trying to be of service in a true way, rather than the hypocrisy that may be all around you. So that's another good thing to know about the fourth subworld. What else? The fourth subworld is a delightful place to live. And no matter what, it's better than the physical world is in general. There's almost no place as nice in the physical world as the fourth subworld is in any respect. Even with all the hypocrisy, it's still nicer than here. Although, if you don't like hypocrisy, that can be it can wear on you, for sure. Okay, let's move on to the third subworld. Service in the third subworld involves a lot of more mental kinds of activity and a lot of technology. Now, people that go to the third subworld, generally speaking, have to have some control over their throat chakra, and they have to have used their power to be of some benefit to the world around them, or they're not going to make it there. A lot of people have not done that, so they don't get to the third subworld. Third subworld requires people who have well-developed lower and higher mental minds up through almost to the soul, but not to the soul. So, at the present time. Now, that may change in the future, but right now that's the way it is. The good thing about it is that people are much more conscious overall, because they are more aware overall than people in the fourth and fifth and lower subworlds. Their awareness is so great that it is actually greater than their love. Isn't that strange? They don't love sometimes any more than people in the fourth subworld, but they have improved their awareness to the point where they kind of make up for it, and so they can wisely give more often. They don't give as much, but they give less conditionally and more unconditionally than people in the fourth subworld do. But overall, they give less conditionally, so they love overall less. It's a little weird thing. And so the world is a little upside down and strange from here. It doesn't resemble anything on Earth, physical Earth, at the present time. It's a world where people have invented and created just incredible things. They're very creative in the fourth subworld, but most of it is more about giving conditionally to other people in some way. Whereas the creations in the third subworld is about truly trying to create more of a godly world in general. It's a good thing, but it has its foibles. And some of them are the following. Some of the creations are designed literally to still increase power because of the third ray factor, and the third ray is still focused on Earth right now. It affects the astral world in such a way that people still can make it a third subworld and still somewhat seek power. They don't seek power as much as anybody below them, but in the subworld, but they still do somewhat. And that creates all kinds of problems. Like, they don't want people who are less conscious in them around them, so they may use the power to force them to stay away from them. And the other problems that they face have to do with the way that they have this inequality in their loving. Sometimes they love amazingly unconditional, truly amazing stuff. They will create stuff for the whole subworld and give it to everyone as a gift. Like, this is for everybody, and they'll help each person to use whatever they create in some better and greater way. Yet at the same time, they're next door neighbor to me. They may be totally ignore in some ways. And maybe even as people lose sense, as they use their selfishness in wrong ways, they'll even force those people to live in other areas. Yeah, so they're not, don't have to even have them mess with the stuff that they've already created. They don't want them breaking anything. They don't want them disturbing their world. It's kind of a contradictory attitude, I know. Now, they're not hypocritical about this. They actually will admit to these selfish ways, but they defend against them by saying, yeah, but we're still more conscious than all the other folks below us, because they don't have anywhere near the use of sense that we have. We're using a lot more of our senses together, and we're creating this amazing world, which will be the future of the physical world, for the most part, hundreds of years from now. And that's the truth. It is true. Things that are our future in terms of technology are in the third astral subworld. But still, there is this problem. And if you get there, you don't want to spend all of your time with the younger folks. You want to spend equal amounts of time with the younger folks and the older folks, trying to gain an understanding of what's wrong. And what's wrong is the overuse of power and the selective use of love, not conditionally, but unconditionally. There's too much unconditional love and still not enough conditional love that would make up for the difference. So there's a lack of love, but they want only perfect love. They don't want imperfect love. And so it's a very strange place. And also knowledge is a big problem. People believe because they have knowledge, it compensates for a lack of consciousness in some circumstances. That's a big illusion. And that illusion comes from a misuse, again, of the throat chakra that they, that sense that they have. It just is a misuse of it. And it's going to probably take maybe 1,000 years or physical years for that to change in the astral world. When you go there, the best thing is to not become engrossed with the technology and knowledge. Find it interesting, learn what you can about it, but pay attention more to loving more and more. And even if you only love conditionally, better to love conditionally than not at all, and just say, well, if I can't love perfectly, I won't love at all. No. Give up that idea, even though that is the idea that will be told you when you get there. And you may have some arguments to deal with. But the other thing is, if you fall into that vein, then the servers will come to you and help you from the higher realm, which will be the second and first subworlds. They try sometimes to help the other folks there, but it's frustrating for them because they have these ways of life that they really believe are right, and they're egotistical about them, and so they're not amenable to change, and that's a problem. People still live a very long life in the third subworld, but some of that life is miserable for them, both when they're younger, because they have some meaning that's lost because of not enough love, and they also, when they get older, because they can't use the technology that they were so fond of while they were younger. And they also feel isolated by the younger folks. So it's a strange place. It's more confused than the Fourth Subworld. The Fourth Subworld has a sense of solidity to it, if you want to call it that. Wherever you go, you feel like you're in the same place. You go to any part of the Third Subworld, and virtually every place you go is like somewhat radically different than the last place you went to. And none of them seem to fit together very well. It all has to do with the nature of the illusions that the people are dealing with. So you can overcome this, and you can still be of service, considerable service in the Third Subworld, even though you may have people arguing against you, literally. If you don't hold on to your egotism and you just become humble, the more you're humble, the more you can survive the experience. Humility comes from just saying, you know, no, I don't. I may be completely wrong about this. Okay, I'll accept that I'm wrong, and try to understand the other person's viewpoint until they can't explain it to the point where it is understandable, and then you realize that, oh, I'm more conscious than they are. They don't understand what they're talking about. But you have to, in order to get to that position, you have to have humility, and you have to observe something called the hierarchy of consciousness, which is difficult for people to get to, but some people have achieved that in the Third Subworld. They're considered the great sayers. They're sometimes listened to, by the way, as well. Sometimes. Even with the egotism that's apparent all over the place. Okay, and then in addressing any of the other models of life, when you're in the sense of service, be it true spiritual service, or if you're serving in whatever way as best as you can, but failing spiritually, in the Third Subworld, the chances are pretty strong that if you continue to do that, you will get to the Second Subworld to serve. You won't get to the first. That's what people think you can just jump, because if the first is a odd raid or masculine raid, subworld energy, and it's just too hard. But you'll end up in the second, and that's just good. And sometimes you'll get there for weeks or months and then fail and end up back in the third. But the point is, if you've done this, you have lived your life, if you've gotten to the Third Subworld, and you're going to successfully serve them, you've lived your life in which you're highly creative, and at the same time, you are not tied to or owned by the creations. And you seek to want to have your creations be of service to others. And so that's where you get to the Third Subworld. If you want to get beyond the Third Subworld, you have to allow your creations to be destroyed by others for the sake of helping to serve them. Now, if you're willing to do that, you can make the Second Subworld, and we'll talk about that next. So, and I better get to that because I'm looking at my clock, and I just realized I'm running out of time already. How can this happen? Okay, better get to the Second Subworld. Now, this is a true spiritual subworld. This is where all service that is done there is either spiritual or produces enough of a conflict in the person to remind them and to cause them great angst that they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. That doesn't mean that everybody that gets to the Second Subworld does spiritual service. As a matter of fact, most people, when they arrive, do almost no spiritual service. Why is that? Because they're conflicted about the nature of God. It has to do with this. Very few people, while they're physically alive, get to serve as a part of God because it's so hard in this world. And to make the jump and go to the Second Subworld is a tremendous challenge. It can be done. You have to have sacrificed, to some extent, a lot of materiality. Even creations, even everything that you can imagine would seem to be of value for other people. You have to be willing to do that just for the sake of allowing other people to grow and to be of service, even though your own service may be destroyed in the process. Now, that's only to a limited extent that you're willing to do it if you're going to the Second Subworld. Usually, no more than half the time. That's the truth of your life if you were physically alive. If it's more than half, it's usually, there's a jump, usually it goes to three quarters. But in any case, if it goes to about three quarters of the time, then your chances are that you're going to at least serve some of the time in the first subworld, even if you go to the second to begin with. Because that's the nature of the difference between the two subworlds. There's a whole choice about God and about sacrifice that completely changes. It gets into really, really, we'll say, deep understandings that people don't usually have about God. Most people, when they end up in the second subworld, their understanding of God is based somewhat upon the tenets that they existed or lived within in their life while physically alive. And most people know nothing about ageless wisdom, you know, which is what I talk about. They get a lot of the God stuff from the world around them in religions. And religions propose a God that has many human characteristics which are not God. And unfortunately, those human characteristics become embedded. They can be anything from vengeance is mine, said the Lord, to, because the Lord is not, God is not vengeful. I mean, it's nonsense. But I realize that the whole religions are based upon it to some extent, or, you know, but it's nonsense. It's not true. And then the other many untruths about God. I mean, we're fed them every day, virtually. Even if you don't go to church or anything, or to a synagogue, it's the same thing, or a mosque. The thing about it is that people, when they get to the second subworld, they have these conflicts because around them they see real service. Remember, the only service that's taken place there that anybody is really doing collectively together is spiritual service. So you get there, and what you used to do was conditional service. And you say, well, but, yeah, okay, I served when I went to church and to the various projects the church had, and I served this or that when I thought of my religion and of God and when I prayed, but the rest of the time I wasn't serving so much. Well, that can't be anymore because you're in a spiritual subworld. So what people do is they isolate themselves from others. And they may get together and talk about and think about service, but they don't serve. It's like, let's all get together and talk about service, and maybe someday we'll do some service. But then they're not serving. And or they, more often than not, they actually spend the time alone. And this could be a long time, like 30, 40, 50 more years, whatever. Those are years in their time, but they're still years. Trying to make a sense out of this place that they're in, where the only way you really serve is you get together with other people and collectively you decide, like souls, how to best serve everybody, and you give up all, most of your creative rights in a sense. You're still an individual, but now you're also a group soul person, but you're neither one, you're both, and you don't understand how to be either. And you're stuck in a position in which you have to let go of your illusions about God. The God that you believed in isn't the God that you're experiencing or living with in this subworld. Some people think it's a trick and they're being, the devil is testing them or something. They don't understand it. And you can understand why they don't understand it, because it's confusing. You know, it's really, really confusing. After a while, they eventually get it. People do come to them to serve from the first subworld and even those around them that are more with it, you know. But it's very difficult. And sometimes they'll spend half their day talking to others. They have classes and universities about God. And you can go and learn and everything and experience, but it still can take some people quite a bit of time because they've already lived their physical life doing good things. They haven't been bad people. They've been very good people. These are really outstanding people in our society. They were just very religious, maybe. Or if they weren't religious, they had their own belief structure about God, and it isn't what they're exactly experiencing in the second subworld, so they get confused. Eventually, they work a way out of it, and eventually they realize that their service is about those that they're serving and serving with, and not about themselves. That's a big jump. Most people in the physical world are not there yet. And it takes somewhere, you know, around 50% to 3/4 of the time. You can jump between the two, but that you're going to be in spiritual service while you're physically alive to actually be comfortable and serve immediately when you arrive in the second subworld. Now, let's talk about the first, and I wish I had more time for this. The first subworld is where people who over three-quarters of the time, up to 90%, 100% of the time, they have spiritually served other physical intellects. There's not that many people who have done that. So a lot of the people are graduates from the second subworld to get to the first subworld. Most people don't go directly to the first subworld, but a few do. And when you get there, the first subworld is dramatically different from the second, because all the conflicts about God are no longer there. Because the creative part that you gave up rejoins in you in the first subworld, but the creative part is about God. You realize you are a co-creator with God in all the service that you do. And you start seeing this thing called the plan. Well, what is the plan? Well, it's for every planet. And the plan is only revealed to those who co-create in it. So as you start becoming a co-creator, you become aware of the plan, and then you become aware of God, and it's only through the awareness of the plan that you can become truly aware of God. And all the conflicts of the second soul will go away. And then your service is a tremendous sacrifice, because many of the people in the first subworld sacrifice a good deal of their life to serve all of the lower subworlds. They go down and meet with the quote-unquote leaders of people controlling things or whatever's going on. In the lower subworlds, they also are the only people who combat evil. They will directly confront evil in the seventh and sixth subworlds. People from the second subworld will not do that, nor will anybody from any of the higher subworlds go confront evil. It's beyond them. They can't understand it, and it frightens the hell out of them. But these folks in the first subworld, they'll do it, and they do it on a regular basis. And they make plans for destroying evil by converting people from these subhuman beings to eventually back to human. Sometimes it's through, unfortunately, force. Most of the time in the astral world, though, it's through confinement. That's the good news. They also deal with issues in our world. And they're concerned about what's going on in the physical world, that they're really the only people in the astral world that are that concerned about the physical world. I'm running out of time here, but the point is that this is the complete astral life of service, is in the first subworld. You made it there, you really made it. And if you can stay there. Some people can stay there a day or two or a week, and then they fall asleep and go to the second subworld. But if you can stay there and spend a lifetime there, that's a long time, by the way, even though you give up maybe half of it, you still may be there 500 to 800 years, even though you're giving up half of your life, because it is so amazing in its both time dilation and in the ability that a person is in creating God. As you create more of God, you live a longer life, because you live eventually forever. Well, guess what? I didn't cover that subject very well, the one on the first subworld. There's a lot more to tell about that. I probably could do a whole show just on the first subworld. All right, well, anyway, if you're thinking about a life of service in the astral world, I hope this show has been of some service to you. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.